Chapter 17. The trees were just beginning to bud. The sea was still foam-capped, but soon its waves would calm, and it would be spring, and time for Odysseus to sail. He would race across the sea, tacking between storms and Poseidon's great hand, his eye fixed on home, and my island would fall silent again. I lay beside him in the moonlight each night. "Just one more season," I imagined saying to him, "just till summer's end. That is when the best winds come." Would surprise him. I would catch the faintest flicker of disappointment in his eyes. Golden witches are not supposed to beg. I let the island plead for me instead, speaking with its eloquent beauty. Every day the stones shed more of their icy chill and the blossoms swelled. We ate picnics on the green grass. We walked on the sun-warm sand and swam in the bright bay. I took him to the shade of an apple tree so that the scent would waft over him while he slept. I unrolled all Aiaia's wonders like a rug before him, and I saw him begin to waver. His men saw too. 13 years they had lived beside him, and though his twisting thoughts were mostly beyond their ken, they sensed a change, as hounds scent the moods of their master. Day by day they grew more restless. "Ithaca," they said loudly, every chance they got. "Queen Penelope. Telemachus." Eurylochus stalked about my halls, glaring. I saw him whispering in corners with the others. When I passed by, they fell silent, gazes down. In ones and twos, they made their creeping way to Odysseus. I waited for him to send them away, but he only stared over their shoulders into the dusty sunset air. I should have left them pigs, I thought. Death's brother is the name that poets give to sleep. For most men, those dark hours are a reminder of the stillness that waits at the end of days. But Odysseus's slumber was like his life, tossed and restless, heavy with murmurs that made my wolves prick up their ears. I watched him in the pearl-gray light of dawn, the tremors of his face, the striving tension in his shoulders. He twisted the sheets as if they were opponents he tried to throw in a wrestling match. A year of peaceful days he had stayed with me, and still every night he went to war. The shutters were open. It must have rained in the night, I thought. The air that drifted in felt washed and very clear. Each sound, bird trills, fluttering leaves, the hush of waves, hung in the air like a chime. I dressed and followed that glory outside. His men still slept. Elpenor was up on the roof, wrapped in one of my best blankets. The wind rippled past me like lyre notes, and my own breath seemed to pipe in harmony. A dewdrop fell from a branch. It struck the earth like the ringing of a bell. I felt my mouth go dry. He stepped out from my stand of laurels. Every line of his body was beautiful, perfect with grace. His dark, loose hair was crowned with a wreath. From his shoulder hung a shining, silver-tipped bow carved from olive wood. "Circe," Apollo said, and it was the greatest chime of all. Every melody in the world belonged to him. He held up an elegant hand. "My brother warned me about your voice. I think it will be better if you speak as little as possible." His words carried no malice, though perhaps that's what malice sounded like in those perfect tones. "I will not be silenced on my own island." He winced. "Hermes said that you were difficult. I come with a prophecy for Odysseus." I felt myself tense. Olympian riddles were always double-edged. "He is inside." "Yes," he said. "I know." The wind struck me across the face. I had no time to cry out. It rushed into my throat, battering its way to my belly as if all the sky were being funneled through me. I gagged, but its swelling force poured on and on, choking off my breath, drowning me in its alien power. Apollo watched, his face pleasant. The island clearing was swept away. Odysseus stood on shore with cliffs rising around him. In the distance were goats and olive groves. I saw a wide-walled house, its courtyard set with stones, its walls gleaming with ancestral weapons. Ithaca. Then Odysseus stood upon a different shore, dark sand and a sky that never saw my father's light. Shadowed poplars loomed and willows trailed their leaves in black water. No birds sang, no beasts moved. I knew the place at once, though I had never been there. A great cave gaped, and in its mouth stood an old man with unseeing eyes. I heard his name in my mind, Tiresias. I threw myself down into the dirt of my garden bed, scrabbling, tugging up the moly roots. I stuffed a few into my mouth. brown earth still clinging. At once the wind ceased, dying as quickly as it had come. I coughed, my whole body shaking. My tongue tasted of slime and ash. I fought to my knees. "You dare," I said. "You dare to misuse me on my own island. I am Titan blood. This will bring war. My father..."
"It was your father who suggested it. My vessels must have prophecy in their blood. You should be honored," he said. "You have borne a vision of Apollo."
His voice was a hymn. His beautiful face showed only the faintest puzzlement. I wanted to tear him with my nails. The gods and their incomprehensible rules. Always there was a reason you must kneel. "I will not tell Odysseus."
"That is beneath my concern," he said. "The prophecy is delivered."
He was gone.
I pressed my forehead to the wrinkled bowl of an olive.
My chest was heaving. I shook with rage and humiliation. How many times would I have to learn? Every moment of my peace was a lie, for it came only at the gods' pleasure. No matter what I did, how long I lived, at a whim they would be able to reach down and do with me what they wished. The sky was not yet fully blue. Inside, Odysseus still slept. I woke him and led him to the hall. I did not tell him the prophecy. I watched him eat and fingered my rage as if it were a knife's point. I wanted to keep it sharp as long as I could, for I knew what would come after. In the vision, he had been back again on Ithaca. The last of my little hopes were gone. I set out my best dishes, broached my oldest wine, but there was no savor in it. His face was abstracted. All day he kept turning to look out the window as if someone would come. We spoke politely, but I felt him waiting for the men to eat, to go to bed. When the last of their voices had died into sleep, he knelt. "Goddess," he said. He never called me that, and so I knew. I truly knew. Perhaps some divinity had come to him as well. Perhaps he had dreamed of Penelope. Our idol was finished. I looked down at his hair, woven with grey. His shoulders were set, his eyes on the ground. I felt a dull anger. At least he might look me in the face.
"What is it, mortal?"
My voice was loud. My lions stirred.
"I must go," he said. "I have stayed too long. My men are impatient."
"Then go. I am a host, not a jailer." He did look at me then.
"I know it, lady. I am grateful to you beyond measure."
His eyes were brown and warm as summer earth. His words were simple. They had no art to them, which of course was also art. He always knew how to show himself to best advantage. It felt a kind of vengeance to say, "I have a message for you from the gods."
"A message?" His face grew wary.
"You will reach home, they say. But first they command you to speak with the prophet Tiresias in the house of death." No sane man could hear such a thing without quailing. He had gone rigid and pale as stone.
"Why?"
"The gods have their own reasons, which they have not seen fit to share."
"Will there never be an end to it?"
His voice was raw. His face was like a wound that had opened up again. My anger drained away. He was not my adversary. His road would be hard enough without the hurt we might do each other. I touched his chest where his great captain's heart beat. "Come," I said, "I do not desert you." I led him to my room and spoke there the knowledge that had been rising in me all day, quick and unceasing like bubbles from a stream. "The winds will carry you past lands and seas to the living world's edge. There is a strand there with a black poplar grove and still dark waters hung with willows. The entrance to the underworld. Dig a pit as big as I will show you. Fill it with the blood of a black ewe and ram and pour libations all around. The hungry shadows will come swarming. They will be desperate for that steaming life after so long in the dark." His eyes were closed, imagining perhaps the souls spilling from their grey halls. He would know some of them. Achilles and Patroclus, Ajax, Hector, all the Trojans he had killed and all the Greeks too, and his crew that had been eaten still crying out for justice. But this would not be the worst. There would be as well souls there he could not predict. The ones from home who had died in his absence. Perhaps his parents, or Telemachus. Perhaps Penelope herself.
"You must hold them off from the blood until Tiresias comes. He will drink his fill and give you his wisdom. Then you will return here for a single day, as there may be more help I can give you."
He nodded. His lids were grey. I touched his cheek.
"Sleep," I said. "You will need it."
"I cannot,"
he said. I understood. He was bracing himself, summoning up his strength to do battle once more. We lay beside each other in silent vigil through the long hours of the night. When it was dawn, I helped him dress with my own hands. I pinned his cloak around his shoulders. I settled his belt and gave him his sword. When we opened the front door, we found Elpenor sprawled upon the flagstones. He had fallen from my roof at last. We gazed down at his bluing lips, the ugly angle of his neck. Already it comes. Odysseus's voice was grim with resignation. I knew what he meant. The fates had him in their yoke again. I will keep him for you. You have no time for a funeral now. We carried the body to one of my beds, wrapped it in a sheet. I brought out stores for their journey and the sheep he needed for the rite. The ship was already prepared. His men had rigged it days ago. Now they loaded it and pushed it into the waves. The seas were churning and cold, the air misted with spray. They would have to fight for every league, and by night their shoulders would be knots. I should have given them salves for it, I thought, but it was too late. I watched the ship struggle over the horizon, then went back and drew the sheet from Elpenor's body. The only corpses I had ever seen were those that had laid broken on my floor, unrecognizable as men. I touched his chest. It was hard and cool. I had heard that in death faces looked younger than they were, but Elpenor had laughed often, and without the spark of life, his face was slack with lines. I washed him and rubbed oils into his skin, as carefully as if he could feel my fingers. I sang as I worked, a melody to keep his soul company while he waited to cross the great river to the underworld. I wrapped him again in his shroud, spoke a charm to keep away the rot, and closed the door behind me. In my garden, the green leaves were so new they shone like blades. I ran my fingers through the soil. Humid summer was gathering, and soon I must start staking out the vines. Last year, Odysseus had helped me. I touched the thought like a bruise, testing its ache. When he was gone, would I be like Achilles, wailing over his lost lover Patroclus? I tried to picture myself running up and down the beaches, tearing at my hair, cradling some scrap of old tunic he had left behind, crying out for the loss of half my soul. I could not see it. That knowledge brought its own sort of pain. But perhaps that is how it was meant to be. In the stories, gods and mortals never joined for long. That night, I stayed in my kitchen, stripping aconite. Already Odysseus would be facing his dead. As he'd left, I had pressed a phial into his hand and asked him to bring me blood from the pit he would make. The shades would infuse it with their chill presence, and I had wanted to feel that power, ashen and unearthly. Now I was sorry I had asked. It was something Perseus or Aetes might do, someone with only witchcraft in their veins and no warmth. I moved carefully through my work, my fingers precise, aware of every sensation. From their shelves, my herbs watched me. Row upon row of simples whose powers I had harvested with my own hands. I liked to see them there in their bowls and bottles, sage and rose, hoarhound, chicory, wild laurel, the moly in its stoppered glass, and last of all, still in its cedar box, silphium ground with wormwood, the draught I had taken each moon since the first time I lay with Hermes, each moon except the last. My nymphs and I waited on the sand, watching the ship ruin. The men waded to the shore in silence. Their bodies sagged as if borne down by stones, sickly and aged. I searched Odysseus's face. It was ghastly. I could not read it. Even their clothes were faded, the fabric leached and grey. They looked like fish, caught beneath a winter's skim of ice. I stepped forward, shining my eyes over them. Welcome, I cried. Welcome back, you hearts of gold, you men of oak. You are heroes for the legends. You have done one of Heracles's labors, seen the house of death and lived. Come, there are blankets here laid for you upon the soft grass. There is wine and food. Rest and be well. They moved slowly, like old men, but they sat. The roast platters stood by, and the wine, deep and red. We served and poured until their cheeks took color. The sun beat down, burning off the cold mist of death. I drew Odysseus aside to a green thicket. Tell me, I said. They live, he said. That is the best news I have. My son and wife live. My father too. Not his mother, I waited. He stared across his scarred knees. Agamemnon was there. His wife had taken her lover, and when he returned, she slaughtered him in the bath like an ox. I saw Achilles and Patroclus, and Ajax bearing the wound he gave himself. They envied me my life, but at least their battles are done. Yours will be done. You will reach Ithaca. I have seen it. I will reach it. But Tiresias said that when I do, I will find men besieging my home, eating my stores and usurping my place. I must find a way to kill them. But then I will die of the sea, while I still walk on land. The gods love their riddles. His voice was more bitter than I had ever heard it. You cannot think of it, I said. It will only torment you. Think instead of the path before you, which carries you home to your wife and son. My path, he said darkly. Tiresias laid it before me. I must pass Thrinakia. The word was an arrow striking home. How many years had it been since I had heard that island's name? The memory rose before me. My shining sisters, and darling, and pretty, and all the rest, swaying like lilies in the gilded dusk. If I do not disturb the cattle, then I will reach home with my men. But if any are harmed, your father will lose his wrath. It will be years before I see Ithaca again, and all my men will die.
Then you will not stop, I said. You will not even land on the shore.
I will not stop. But it was not so simple, and we knew it. The fates lured and tricked. They set obstacles to drive you into their toils. Anything might serve them, the winds, the waves, the weak hearts of men.
If you run aground, I said, keep to the beach. Do not go look at the herds. You cannot know how they will tempt your hunger. They are to cows what gods are to mortals.
I will hold.
It was not his will, I feared. But what good would it do to say so, to sit over his door like a death owl? He knew what his men were, and a new thought was rising in me. I was remembering the sea routes Hermes had drawn for me so long ago. I traced them in my mind. If he went by Thrinakia, then...
I closed my eyes. Another punishment from the gods. For him and me as well. What is it?
I opened my eyes. Listen to me, I said. There are things you must know. I drew the journey for him. One by one, I laid out the dangers he must avoid, the shoals, the barbarous islands, the sirens, those birds with women's heads who lure men to their death with song. At last I could delay no more. Your path takes you past Scylla as well. You know her? He knew. I watched the blow fall. 6 men or 12.
There must be some way to prevent her, he said. Some weapon I might use.
It was one of my favorite things about him, how he always fought for his chance. I turned away so I would not have to see his face when I said, No, there is nothing, not even for such a mortal as you. I faced her once, long ago, and escaped only through magic and godhead. But the sirens, there you may use your tricks. Fill your men's ears with wax, and leave your own free. If you tie yourself to the mast, you may be the first man to ever hear their song and tell the tale. Would that not make a good story for your wife and son?
It would, but his voice was dull as a ruined blade. There was nothing I could do. He was passing from my hands.
We carried Elpenor to his pyre. We did the rites for him, sang his deeds of war, set his name in the record of men who lived. My nymphs wailed, and the men wept. But he and I stood dry and silent. After, we loaded his ship with all the stores of mine that he could hold. His men stood at the ropes and oars. They were eager now, darting glances at each other, scuffling at the deck with their feet. I felt hollowed, gouged like a beach beneath a keel. Odysseus, son of Laertes, the great traveler, prince of wiles and tricks and 1,000 ways. He showed me his scars. And in return he let me pretend that I had none. He stepped onto his ship, and when he turned back to look for me, I was gone.
Chapter 18. How would the songs frame the scene? The goddess on her lonely promontory, her lover dwindling in the distance, her eyes wet but inscrutable, cast inward to private thoughts. Beasts gather at her hem. The lindens bloom, and at the last,
Just before he disappears over the horizon, she lifts one hand and touches it to her belly. My guts began to boil the moment his anchor was up. I, who had never been sick in my life, now was sick every moment. I heaved until my throat was torn, my stomach rattling like an old nut, my mouth cracked at its corners, as if my body would cast up everything it had eaten for 100 years. My nymphs wrung their hands and clutched each other. They had never seen such a thing. In pregnancy, our kind glowed and swelled like buds. They thought I was poisoned, or else cursed with some unholy transformation, my body turning itself inside out. When they tried to help me, I pushed them away. The child I carried would be called demigod, but that word was deceiving. From my blood, he would have a few special graces, beauty or speed, strength or charm. But all the rest would come from his father, for mortality always bred truer than godhead. His flesh would be subject to the same 1,000 pricks and fatalities that threaten every man. I trusted such frailty to no god, no family of mine, to none but myself alone. "Leave now," I said to them in my new, ragged voice. "I do not care how you do it. Send to your fathers and go. This is for me." What they thought of such words I never knew. I was seized again, my eyes blind and watering. By the time I had found my way back to the house, they were gone. I suppose their fathers obliged because they feared pregnancy by a mortal might be catching. The house felt strange without them, but I had no time to think of it, and no time to mourn for Odysseus either. The sickness did not cease. Every hour it rode me. I could not understand why it took me so hard. I wondered if it was the mortal blood fighting with mine, or if I was cursed indeed, if some stray hex of Aetes had circled all this while and found me at last. But the affliction yielded to no counterspell, not even Moly. "It is no mystery," I said to myself. "Have you not always insisted on being difficult in everything you do?" I could not defend myself from sailors in such shape, and I knew it. I crawled to my herb pots and cast the spell I had thought of so long ago, an illusion to make the island look like hostile, wrecking rocks to any ship that passed. I lay on the ground after, breathing with effort. I would be left in peace. Peace! I would have laughed if I were not so ill. The sour tang of cheese in the kitchen, the salt stink of seaweed on the breeze, the wormy earth after rain, the sickly roses browning on the bush. All of them brought the bile stinging to my throat. Headaches followed, like urchin spines driven into my eyes. This is how Zeus must have felt before Athena leapt from his skull, I thought. I crawled to my room and lay in the shuttered dark, dreaming of how sweet it would be to cut through my neck and make an end. Yet, as strange as it sounds, even in such extremities of misery, I was not wholly miserable. I was used to unhappiness, formless and opaque, stretching out to every horizon. But this had shores, depths, a purpose and a shape. There was hope in it, for it would end and bring me my child, my son. For whether by witchcraft or prophetic blood, that is what I knew he was. He grew, and his fragility grew with him. I had never been so glad of my immortal flesh, layered like armor around him. I was giddy, feeling his first kicks, and I spoke to him every moment as I crushed my herbs, as I cut clothes for his body, wove his cradle out of rushes. I imagined him walking beside me, the child and boy and man that he would be. I would show him all the wonders I had gathered for him, this island and its sky, the fruits and sheep, the waves and lions, the perfect solitude that would never be loneliness again. I touched my hand to my belly. Your father said once that he wanted more children, but that is not why you live. You are for me. Odysseus had told me that Penelope's pains began so faintly she thought them a stomach ache from too many pears. Mine dropped from the sky like a thunderbolt. I remember crawling to the house from the garden, hunched against the tearing contraction. I had the willow draught ready and I drank some, then all, and by the end I was licking the bottle's neck. I knew so little of childbirth, its stages and progression. The shadows changed, but it was all one endless moment. the pain like stones grinding me to meal. I screamed and pushed against it for hours, and still the baby did not come. Midwives had tricks to help the child move, but I did not know them. One thing I did understand, if it took too long, my son would die. On it went. In my agonies, I overturned a table. After, I would find the room torn apart as if by bears, tapestries ripped from the walls, stools shattered, platters broken. I do not remember it. My mind was lurching through 1,000 terrors. Was the baby dead already? Or was I, like my sister, growing some monster within me? The unremitting pain only seemed a confirmation. If the baby were whole and natural, wouldn't he come? I closed my eyes. Putting a hand inside myself, I felt for the smooth curve of the child's head. It had no horns, no other horrors I could tell. It was only stuck against the inner opening, squeezed between my muscles and my bones. I prayed to Ilithyia, goddess of childbirth. She had the power to loosen the womb's hold and bring the child into the world. She was said to watch over the birth of every god and demigod. "Help me," I cried out, but she did not come. The animals whined in their corners, and I began to remember the whispers of my cousins in Oceanus's halls so long ago. If a god did not wish your child to be born, they might hold Ilithyia back. The thought seized my careering mind. Someone was keeping her from me. Someone dared to try to harm my son. It gave me the strength I needed. I bared my teeth at the dark and crawled to the kitchen. I seized a knife and dragged a great bronze mirror to face me, for there was no Daedalus now to help. I leaned against the marble wall amid the broken table legs. The coolness of the stone calmed me. This child was no minotaur, but a mortal. I must not cut too deep. I had been afraid the pain would undo me, but I scarcely felt it. There was a rasping sound, like stone upon stone, that I realized was my own breath. The layers of flesh parted, and I saw him at last, limbs curled like a snail in its shell. I stared, afraid to move him. What if he was dead already? What if he was not, and I killed him with my touch? But I drew him forth, and his skin met the air, and he began to wail. I wailed with him, for I had never heard a sweeter sound. I laid him on my chest. The stones beneath us felt like feathers. He was shuddering and shuddering, pressing my skin with his wet, living face. I cut the cord, holding him all the while. "See," I told him, "we do not need anyone." In answer, he made a froggy croak and closed his eyes. My son, Telegonus. I did not go easy to motherhood. I faced it as soldiers face their enemies, girded and braced, sword up against the coming blows. Yet all my preparations were not enough. In those months I had spent with Odysseus, I had thought I'd learned some tricks of mortal living. 3 meals a day, the fluxes, the washing and cleaning. 20 diaper cloths I had cut and believed myself wise. But what did I know of mortal babies? Aetes was in arms less than a month. 20 cloths got me only through the first day. Thank the gods I did not have to sleep. Every minute I must wash and boil and clean and scrub and put to soak. Yet how could I do that, when every minute he also needed something, food and change and sleep? That last I had always thought the most natural thing for mortals, easy as breathing, yet he could not seem to do it. However I wrapped him, however I rocked and sang, he screamed, gasping and shaking until the lions fled, until I feared he would do himself harm. I made a sling to carry him so he might lie against my heart. I gave him soothing herbs. I burned incenses. I called birds to sing at our windows. The only thing that helped was if I walked. Walked the halls, walked the hills, walked the shore. Then at last he would wear himself out, close his eyes, and sleep. But if I stopped, if I tried to put him down, he would wake at once. Even when I walked without ceasing, he was soon up, screaming again. Within him was an ocean's worth of grief, which could only be stopped a moment, never emptied. How often in those days did I think of Odysseus's smiling child? I tried his trick, along with all the rest. Held my son's floppy body up into the air, promised him he was safe. He only screamed louder. Whatever made the Prince Telemachus so sweet, I thought, it must have come from Penelope. This was the child I deserved. We did find some moments of peace. When he finally slept, when he nursed at my breast, when he smiled at a flight of birds scattering from a tree, I would look at him and feel a love so sharp it seemed my flesh lay open. I made a list of all the things I would do for him. Scald off my skin, tear out my eyes, walk my feet to bones if only he would be happy and well. He was not happy. A moment, I thought. I only need one moment without his damp rage in my arms. But there was none. He hated sun. He hated wind. He hated baths. He hated to be clothed, to be naked, to lie on his belly and his back. He hated this great world and everything in it, and me, so it seemed, most of all. I thought of all those hours I had spent working my spells, singing, weaving. I felt their loss like a limb torn away. I told myself I even missed turning men to pigs, for at least that I had been good at. I wanted to hurl him from me, but instead I marched on in that darkness with him, back and forth before the waves, and at every step I yearned for my old life. I spoke sourly to the night air as he wailed, "At least I do not worry, he is dead." I clapped a hand to my mouth, for the god of the underworld comes at much less invitation. I held his fierce little face against me. The tears were standing in his eyes, his hair disordered, a small scratch on his cheek. How had he gotten it? What villain dared to hurt him? Everything that I had heard of mortal babies flooded back, how they died for no reason, for any reason, because they grew too cold, too hungry, because they lay one way or another. I felt each breath in his thin chest. How improbable it was. How unlikely that this frail creature, who could not even lift his head, could survive in the harsh world. But he would survive. He would, if I must wrestle the veiled god myself. I stared into the darkness. I listened like wolves do, pricked for any danger. I wove again those illusions that made my island look like savage rocks. But still, I feared. Sometimes men were reckless in their desperation. If they landed on the rocks anyway, they would hear his screams and come. What if I had forgotten my tricks and could not make them drink? I remembered the stories Odysseus had told me of what soldiers did to children. Astyanax and all the sons of Troy, smashed and spitted, torn to pieces, trampled by horses, killed and killed so they would not live and grow to strength and one day come looking for their vengeance. My whole life I had waited for tragedy to find me. I never doubted that it would, for I had desires and defiance and powers more than others thought I deserved, all the things that draw the thunderstroke. A dozen times grief had scorched, but its fire had never burned through my skin. My madness in those days rose from a new certainty that at last I had met the thing the gods could use against me. I fought on, and he grew. That is all I can say. He calmed, and that calmed me, or maybe it was the opposite. I did not stare so much, think so often of scalding myself. He smiled for the first time and began to sleep in his cradle. He went a whole morning without screaming, and I could work in my garden. "Clever child," I said. "You were testing me, weren't you?" He looked up from the grass at the sound of my voice and smiled again. His mortality was always with me, constant as a second beating heart. Now that he could sit up, reach and grasp, all the ordinary objects of my house showed their hidden teeth. The boiling pots on the fire seemed to leap for his fingers. The blades slipped from the table a hair's breadth from his head. If I set him down, a wasp would come droning, a scorpion scuttle from some hidden crevice and raise its tail. The sparks from the fire always seemed to pop in arcs towards his tender flesh. Each danger I turned aside in time, for I was never more than a step from him, but it only made me more afraid to close my eyes, to leave him for an instant. The woodpile would topple on him. A wolf who had been gentle her whole life would snap. I would wake to see a viper reared over his crib, jaws wide. It is a sign, I think, of how addled I was with love and fear and no sleep, that it took me so long to realize that stinging insects should not come in battalions, and 10 falling pots in a morning was beyond even my tired clumsiness. To remember how, in the long agony of my labor, Eilithyia had been kept from me. To wonder if, thwarted, the god that had done it might try again. I slung Telegonus against me and walked to the old pool that lay halfway up the peak. There were frogs in it, silver minnows and water skimmers. The weeds were thickly tangled. I could not say why it was water that I wanted at that moment. Perhaps some relic of my naiad blood. I touched my finger to the pool's surface. Does a god seek to harm my son? The pool shivered, and an image of Telegonus formed. He lay, wrapped in a wool shroud, grey and lifeless. I started back, gasping, and the vision broke to pieces. For a moment I could do nothing but breathe and press my cheek to Telegonus's head. His faint wisps of hair were worn away at the back with endless fidgeting in his cot. I put my trembling hand to the water again. Who is it? The water showed only the sky overhead. Please, I begged, but no answer came, and I felt panic climbing my throat. I had assumed it was some nymph or river god who threatened us. Tricks of insects and fire and animals were just at the limits of a lesser divinity's natural power. I had even wondered if it was my mother in a fit of jealousy that I might bear new children when she could not. But this god had the strength to escape my vision. There were only a handful of such deities in all the world. My father, my grandfather perhaps, Zeus and a few of the greater Olympians. I clutched Telegonus against me. Moly could ward off a spell, but not a trident, not a lightning bolt. I would fall to those powers like a stalk of wheat. I closed my eyes and fought back the strangling fear. I must be clear and clever. I must remember all the tricks that lesser gods have used against greater since the beginning of time. Had not Odysseus once told me a story about Achilles' sea nymph mother, who had found a way to bargain with Zeus? But he had not said what that way was. And in the end, her son had died. My breath felt like saw blades in my chest. I must learn who it is, I told myself. That is first. I cannot guard against shadows. Give me something to face and fight. Back at the house, I made a small fire in the hearth, though we did not need it. The night was warm, summer waxing to autumn, but I wanted the smell of cedar in the air and the tang of my herbs, which I had sprinkled over the flames. I was aware of a tingling on my skin. Any other time I would have taken it for a change in the weather, but now it seemed curdled with malice. My neck bristled. I paced the stone floor, cradling Telegonus against me until at last, exhausted from his wailing, he slept. It was what I had waited for. I laid him in his crib, then drew it close to the fire and set my lions and wolves around it. They could not stop a god, but most divinities are cowards. Claws and teeth might buy me a little time. I stood before the hearth, my staff in my hand. The air was thick with a listening silence. You who would try to kill my child, come forth. Come forth and speak to my face. Or do you only do your murdering from the shadows? The room was utterly still. I heard nothing but Telegonus's breath and the blood in my veins. I need no shadows. The voice sliced the air. And it is not for such as you to question my purposes. She struck the room, tall and straight and sudden white, a talon of lightning in the midnight sky. Her horsehair helmet brushed the ceiling. Her mirror armor threw off sparks. The spear in her hand was long and thin, its keen edge limned in firelight. She was burning certainty. And before her, all the shuffling and stained dross of the world must shrink away. Zeus's bright and favorite child, Athena. What I desire will come to pass. There is no mitigation. That voice again like shearing metal. I had stood in the presence of great gods before, my father and grandfather, Hermes, Apollo. Yet her gaze pierced me as theirs had not. Odysseus had said once she was like a blade honed to a hair's fineness, so delicate you would not even know you had been cut, while beat by beat your blood was emptying on the floor. She extended one immaculate hand. Give me the child. All the warmth in the room had fled. Even the fire popping beside me seemed only a painting on the wall. No. Her eyes were braided silver and stone grey. You would stand against me. The air had thickened. I felt as though I gasped for breath. On her chest shone her famous aegis, leather armor fringed with golden threads. It was said to be made from the skin of a titan that she had flayed and tanned herself.
her flashing eyes promised, just so will I wear you, if you do not submit and beg for mercy. My tongue withered, and I felt myself trembling. But if there was one thing I knew in all the world, it was that there was no mercy among gods. I twisted my skin between my fingers. The sharp pain steadied me.
I would, I said, though it hardly seems a fair battle, you against an unarmed nymph.
Give him to me willingly, and there need not be a battle. I will make sure it is quick. He will not suffer.
Do not listen to your enemy, Odysseus had once told me. Look at them. It will tell you everything. I looked. Armed and armored she was, from head to foot, helmet, spear, aegis, greaves. A terrifying vision, the goddess of war ready for battle. But why had she assembled such a panoply against me, who knew nothing of combat? Unless there was something else she feared. Something that made her feel somehow stripped and weak. Instinct carried me forward. The 1,000 hours I had spent in my father's halls, and with Odysseus's Polymetis, man of so many wiles. Great goddess, all my life I have heard the stories of your power, so I must wonder. You have wanted my child dead for some time, and yet he lives. How can that be? She had begun swelling like a snake, but I pressed on. I can only think, then, that you are not permitted, that something prevents you. The fates, for their purposes, do not allow you to kill him outright. At that word, fates, her eyes flashed. She was a goddess of argument, born from the bright, relentless mind of Zeus. If she was forbidden something, even by the 3 grey goddesses themselves, she would not simply submit. She would set about passing the constraint down to its atoms and try to eke a way through. So that is why you have worked as you have, with wasps and falling pots, I regarded her. How such low means must have galled your warrior spirit. Her hand glowed white on her spear shaft. Nothing has changed. The child must die. And so he will, when he is 100. Tell me, how long do you think your witcheries will stand against me? As long as they need to. You are too quick. She took a step towards me. The horsehair plume hissed against my ceiling. You have forgotten your place, nymph. I am daughter of Zeus. Perhaps I cannot strike directly at your son, but the fates say nothing about what I can do to you. She set the words in the room precisely as stones in a mosaic. Even among gods, Athena was known for her wrath. Those who defied her were turned to stones and spiders, driven mad, snatched up by whirlwinds, hounded and cursed to the ends of the world. And if I were gone, then Telegonus. Yes, she said. Her smile was flat and cold. You begin to understand your situation. She lifted her spear from the floor. It did not shine now. It flowed like liquid darkness in her hand. I stepped back against the woven side of the crib, my mind scrambling. It is true, you might harm me, I said. But I have a father too, and a family. They do not take lightly the careless chastising of our blood. They would be angry. They might even be stirred to action. The spear still hovered off the floor, but she did not heft it. If there is war, Titan, Olympus will win it. If Zeus wanted war, he would have sent his thunderbolt against us long ago, yet he holds off. What will he think of you destroying his hard-won peace? I saw in her eyes the click of counters, stones tallied on this side and that. Your threats are crude. I had hoped we might discuss this reasonably. There can be no reason as long as you seek to murder my child. You are angry with Odysseus, but he does not even know the boy exists. Killing Telegonus will not punish him. You presume, witch. If it were not my son's life at stake, I might have laughed at what I saw in her eyes. For all her cleverness, she had no skill at concealing her emotions. Why would she? Who would dare harm the great Athena for her thoughts? Odysseus had said she was angry with him, but he did not understand the true nature of gods. She was not angry. Her absence was only that old trick Hermes had spoken of. Turn your back on a favorite and drive him to despair. Then return in glory and revel in the groveling you will get. If not to hurt Odysseus, why seek my son's death? That knowledge is not for you. I have seen what will come, and I tell you that this infant cannot live.
If he does, you will be sorry for it all the rest of your days. You are tender to the child, and I do not blame you for it. But do not let a mother's doting cloud your sense. Think, daughter of Helios, is it not wiser to give him to me now, when he is barely set into the world, when his flesh and your affections are still half-formed? Her voice softened. Imagine how much worse it will be for you in a year, or two, or ten, when your love is full-grown. Better to send him easy to the House of Souls now. Better to bear another child and begin to forget with new joys. No mother should have to see her child's death. And yet, if such must come, if there is no other way, still there may be recompense. Recompense. Of course. Her face shone bright upon me as the forge's heart. You do not think I ask for sacrifice without offering reward. You will have the favor of Pallas Athena, my goodwill through eternity. I will set a monument for him upon this isle. In time, I will send another good man to you, to father another son. I will bless the birth, protect the child from all ills. He will be a leader among mortals, feared in battle, wise in counsel, honored by all. He will leave heirs behind him and fulfill your every maternal hope. I will ensure it. It was the richest prize in all the world, rare as the golden apples of the Hesperides, the sworn friendship of an Olympian. You would have every comfort, every pleasure. You would never fear again. I looked into that shining grey gaze, her eyes like two hanging jewels twisting to catch the light. She was smiling, her hand open towards me as if ready to receive mine. When she had spoken of children, she had nearly crooned, as if to lull her own babe. But Athena had no babe, and she never would. Her only love was reason, and that has never been the same as wisdom. Children are not sacks of grain to be substituted one for the other. I will pass over the fact that you think me a mare to be bred at your whim. The true mystery is why my son's death is worth so much to you. What will he do that the mighty Athena would pay so dearly to avoid? All her softness was gone in an instant. Her hand withdrew like a door slamming shut. You set yourself against me then, you with your weeds and your little divinity. Her power bore down on me, but I had Telegonus, and I would not give him up, not for anything. I do, I said. Her lips curled back, showing the white teeth within. You cannot watch him all the time. I will take him in the end. She was gone, but I said it anyway, to that great empty room and my son's dreaming ears. You do not know what I can do.